January 31st, the Ira Kaufman podcast is on. That means the Sage of Tampa Bay Sports is in the house. Ira, before I start talking about other stuff, how are you? You look good. It's that time of year where we're almost in February. You've been hanging out with Bruce Arians, and next thing you know, free agency will be here. This is great.
I was going to bitch about no sun being out this morning, and then I looked at the temperature in Chicago and the frozen Lake Michigan, and people are taking pictures from the plane of Lake Michigan and Minneapolis, and then you realize, hey, 53 doesn't sound so bad, Steve. So I'm in a chipper mood, much to discuss on this lively podcast, my friend.
Absolutely, Ira. We are presented by Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, the presenters of all of your work, Ira. EdMorseCadillacTampa.com is the website. They are just west of 275 on Fletcher. And with the end of the month, Ira, of course, all the new offers for February are just around the corner. You want to shop now at EdMorseCadillacTampa.com. If you want to shop tonight before when this podcast pops, you got a few hours, head over there. All the great offers you can see at the website before you go over. Get some nice online help. 70-plus years of Ed Morse, family dealership now serving and has been serving across Florida for so many years. They've actually expanded now into the Dallas area. It was a big news on the automotive scene, but they are family-run here locally. General Manager Brian Danahy is part of the family, as we've learned here on the podcast with his visits. And at Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, again, that's Hillsborough County's other Cadillac dealership. There are only two. They belong to Ed Morse right there on Causeway Boulevard. Go to the website, EdMorseCadillacBrandon.com. The Instacash savings on your trade and phenomenal discounts on 2018s. EdMorseCadillacBrandon.com. So, Ira, look, interesting time this time of year because some nuggets emerge that Bucks fans are interested in as we close the door on the 2018 season and we head to the new year. So one little door, Ira, because you've been obsessed with this for months, the firing of Mike Smith. This has obsessed your brain. You want to know who ordered the hit. Who ordered the hit? Dirk Cutter told us all there's no point to firing Mike Smith. Yeah, why would we change coordinators? Then 2 weeks later, he fires them. You have insisted it is a hit from the top. Well, Mike Smith, the guy's out at Radio Row. He's got a beard like Lovie Smith, and he is Mr. Relaxed. He's out there this week in Atlanta where he's very well known.
But he bumps into our boy at a coffee shop over there, Steven.
Of course, Lee is still doing his Super Bowl duty. For JoeBucksFan.com, Lee DeKemper, I'm Steve Isbitz. We are JoeBucksFan.com.
I believe DeKemper was on his third donut when Mike Smith walked into that coffee shop, Steve. Sorry, Lee. Sorry. You're not here to defend yourself. But well, isn't that unbelievable that Smith approached DeKemper? DeKemper didn't even see him. Walks around. Here comes this bearded man. He didn't know whether to shake hands with Mike Smith or give a panhandler a $1.50. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Or to just, for Mike Smith to just haul off and punch him in the face, you know? But no, they actually chatted for a while and,
you know, it's classy of Mike Smith because he knows we have been critical, heavily critical.
Sure.
And didn't hold any grudges and treated Lee with a lot of respect. That speaks well for Mike Smith.
It does, and, you know, it helps to have that big fat check from the Glazers making things that much more comfortable. It's not all roses in the NFL. He knows that.
He's on that seventh green every freaking day, isn't he, Steve? Every day.
He's out there still pitching his book from 2015. And it's funny. I listened to some local radio, even my good friend Rick Stroud, who got it wrong on his podcast. It's not a new book by Mike Smith. It's the same three-year-old book. You win in the locker room first.
I wish a couple of people at $1 would have read the book. Steve, we might not have had some of these.
Did anybody
the
read the book?
Years.
Yeah, Dirk Cutter. That would have been the best question for Dirk. Dirk, did you read Mike's book?
You can't read that book and bring in Chris Baker. You can't read that book maybe and bring in DeSean Jackson. Come on now.
I mean, the comedy value of Mike Smith walking around with a book that says you went in the locker room first, the seven C's of success. Come on. Anyway, so Mike Smith, Ira, I've heard him do maybe 8 interviews. I listen to all of them. Mining for Bucks Nuggets, every outlet, everywhere. And it was obvious to me that Mike Smith, no issue at all with Dirk Cutter, loves Dirk, thinks he's great, raving about the job he's going to do in Atlanta. And they clearly, from something I heard Smith said, clearly they have talked recently. Does that bolster your theory that the hit came from Team Glazer?
I think it does, Steve. You know, the bond between those two, it's unshakable. I mean, it goes back to the Jacksonville days, long, long time ago. Covers different franchises, different roles. Smith used to be Cutter's boss. Cutter ended up being Smith's boss. I'm still going to stick to my guns over here. Whether he should have been fired at the bye week, you know my feeling. He should have been fired at the bye week. Then they go to Atlanta. Funny, where do they go? Atlanta, after the bye week. Here come the Falcons, first three possessions. Touchdown, touchdown, touchdown. At that very moment, you got to think, Ed Glazer dropped his bagel or whatever, quesadilla, whatever he had, and probably got on the phone right then and there and said, he's got to go. He's got to go. And I don't think there was a lot of doubt after that. And would Dirk Cutter have fired Mike Smith without a nudge from above? We'll never know. But I don't think Dirk Cutter wanted to fire Mike Smith. Some of Smith's comments, and by the way, speaking of Smith's comments to Lee, I've talked to Lee, and he told me about his conversation with Smith. And when Lee would ask Smith, you know, a pointed question about what went wrong with the 2018 Bucks, Smith wouldn't answer him. He just wouldn't answer him. He says, I can't get into that. I can't get into that. When Lee would make a couple of statements like, hey, your locker room wasn't nearly as good as it should have been, Smith could have said, you're wrong. He could have said, you're on the wrong track. He didn't do it. He's got too much class to take any pot shots at players or fellow coaches on Cutter's staff. But I think Smith's done with football. And Steve, this is a guy who 2 years ago was interviewing for head coaching jobs around the league. Some people thought he had a shot. And now he's done with football. Look, the book's closed on Mike Smith.
I got you.
And when you look at the book, it's not a bad book. Mike, he did a good job with the Falcons. Especially early. Very good job.
And an amazing five-year run and a couple of bad years. It's just interesting, Ira. He was asked, you know, but here, go to your theory of, hey, he didn't throw anybody under the bus or whatever. He still could have just said, hey, we had a bad locker room. But what he did tell CBS Radio, Ira, he was asked the Tampa job, what went wrong down there. That's a tough place to coach, it seems. What went wrong? And he gave this pablum answer of nothing. And kudos to the host, Brandon Tierney, says, you're not getting away with that, Mike. You're right here in person on Radio Row. You're not getting away with that. What's wrong with the whole situation in Tampa? Endless losing. What's going on? You've been around this game. So he says, Mike Smith says, quote, culture is very, very important. And it's such a fine line, guys, to what's the right culture and what's going to lead to failure. Obviously, the culture has not been what it needs to be to have a sustained winning program in Tampa, which is probably as direct as you're going to get from Mike Smith.
Is that code? I mean, what's it code for, Steve? I mean, is it code for lousy coaching?
I don't know.
Is he taking a shot at ownership? What's going on? I mean, the fact is, he was there for 3 years working with Dirk Cutter, and when the smoke clears, you know, they got 19 wins to show for it. Not nearly enough.
Yeah, that's why I was putting it out to you, Ira. Code, I don't know what the code is, but...
And this is the guy that wrote about culture and a locker room.
Yeah,
that's his book.
Yeah, that's his book. Yeah, so, yeah. I don't know. It was interesting, and of course, Tiki Barber asks him point blank, Ira, quote, do you believe in Jameis, and did the team believe in Jameis? And you know Mike Smith's sitting there saying, why did I come here? What am I doing?
I could have got another cup of coffee at Starbucks. Yeah.
I could have gone and talked to the Chicago radio station where they don't care about Jameis.
Yeah.
But I'm talking to Tiki Barber.
So he asked him about Winston.
Point blank, asked him, do you believe in Jameis? Does the team believe in Jameis? What does Mike Smith say? I think Jameis is a very talented player. And as you know, quarterbacks have to be able to distribute the ball and not throw it to the other team. Right, Tiki? And goes on, hey, that's a big thing. No turnovers. We turned it over too much. And then he says, hey, defense didn't get it done either. And then he reminds them again, quote, I was just there for the first five games of the season. Sort of taking himself.
Why? Did he think the defense got worse after he got canned?
I don't know. Maybe he did. Maybe he watched that last Atlanta game and said, oh, God.
Well, try telling that to Mark Duffner. That the defense deteriorated. Come on, that would be absurd if Smith really felt that way.
But, interesting, Ira. Right now, and I don't know why you know, we're just speculating here. Mark Duffner doesn't have a job.
Yeah, that's a great point, Steve.
No job. So maybe he wants to retire. I don't know. But no job, no linebackers coach gig. And he, I think, 23 years straight in the NFL. No Mark Duffner now. So I don't know. I'm curious to see what's really going on with Duffner.
Who else did DeKemper run into in the beautiful Atlanta, Steve? He made a lot of tracks. Wasn't he talking to Sapev at a certain point?
I don't know. I mean, he talked to so many people, and of course, he'll be back on the podcast next week, so you guys can get it straight from him. We don't want to speak for Lee, but he's put out some nuggets on the website, from Boomer Esiason to Jones Drew, and I know Lee's got a whole bag of tricks for us to share.
We were supposed to be two ships passing in the night in Atlanta, and that's not going to happen. So I'll tell our listeners that I'm not going to Atlanta. I made that decision a few days ago. I've got a health situation at home that demands my attention. So that's more important than any NFL meeting, although I love my fellow 47 selectors. So I will not be going to Atlanta. First thing I did was get somebody to deliver my speech for me, and it's Shireen Williams. Used to work for the Orlando Sentinel, covered John Lynch during the Buck Glory days. Lynch knows her. She knows Lynch. She's a long time at Fort Worth. Now she's working for Florio at Pro Football Talk, doing a bang-up job there. She is now a at-large selector. She's been in that room many times. She's made presentations, well-respected. I sent her my speech, Steve, yesterday, and I told her feel free to put her own spin on it, which she will. And then I only asked one request. Deliver this speech with a Brooklyn accent, Shireen. Do the best you can. She's laughed. So, look. We've been very aggressive. You know what's been going on behind the scenes. We've been very proactive on John Lynch's behalf.
Yeah, let me clarify for the good folks. So what does this mean? It means that Ira made a judgment call, and he won't be presenting John Lynch this year, and the hall allowed you to pick who you wanted to make your speech. But it is your speech. So all that work you put in is not for naught. And having heard the speech myself...
I just ran that speech past you, Stephen.
Yeah, you gave me the full delivery, which was fantastic. I'll give it an A. I'm a tough grader, Ira. You know that. I give it an A, not an A+, but we could talk about that.
I can handle an A.
But excellent. I'm glad that you opened up with some of the Denver stuff. Very powerful. Very powerful. Fingers crossed that Shireen can match your intensity with
and
that.
Get him across that finish line, Steve. Get
but
him across.
But I think you know, having a woman do the presentation might... snap, and I'm not being sexist here, but a different type of voice late in the process, because you've told the listeners that you were going number...
next to last, 14th.
Yeah, so that's after 8 hours of a lot of sports writers listening, dozing, eating, farting. That room is, they're dying, there's stinks in there.
What order did you list those things, Steve? That's a good order, good order.
So, I mean, that's what's going on in there,
yeah.
And, you know, it's might be nice to have a different voice there. Not that yours wouldn't be different, but at least a different feel.
You know, we'll be in Miami next year, and I'm going to retain my spot as the Tampa Bay representative for Joe Bucks fan.
Nothing has changed, so if you hear anything elsewhere that, oh, Ira didn't go, Ira's out, or this guy, you know, no, it's not the case.
It was my call. It was my
Ira's call. Ira is still on the committee, the senior committee.
That's right. I'll be going to Canton this summer.
So you'll be there in after the Hall of Fame game, sitting down, hammering out.
I think we picked two senior candidates this year.
And there'll be a new director of the Hall at that time, right, Ira?
Yeah, Joe Harrigan's retiring. He's done tremendous work for the Hall. That's one of my regrets not going up there is I can't shake his hand and give him a formal goodbye. But, you know, Harrigan's going to be around. He'll be in Miami next year.
Yeah, so. I actually read that he's not retiring like I want to go.
He'll have an emeritus job, Steve, you know, as he deserves.
He does a lot of other things. He's just getting out of the Hall position. So
he's considered the historian of the Hall, Steve. Quite a historian.
Anyway, we're sad you didn't get to go, Ira, but you know what? You did the right thing, and it's your speech. It's powerful. It's your work on display. So fun
stuff. Can Shireen pull this off with a Brooklyn accent, Steve? Can she do it?
No. I've talked to Shireen a couple
times.
No
it.
Chance.
Can't do
yeah,
it.
No chance. Right. I don't know where she's from, but no, she's got no shot. I hope she doesn't try. Let's put it that way.
Steve, I think it's worth mentioning, and you can give your spin on this. You know what's gone on behind the scenes. The Bucks have been involved. So I got to give a big thank you to the Bucks. They've been very proactive. They've sent out emails to selectors. There's going to be a brochure that's going to be handed out that morning with everybody sitting around the table. A nice colored brochure that hits the spots that need to be hit for John Lynch, charts, quotes from some great people like Favre and Kurt Warner and John Madden. It's a quick read. They can look at it while the speech is being delivered, and it will reinforce the points that are being made.
Absolutely, and I look forward to getting one of those brochures. I want my hands on one of those bad boys.
I can't wait to see the results of what happens Saturday, Steve. It's hard. I mean, we've talked about this. I mean, 5 out of 15 maximum, 5 out of 15, 10 people go home disappointed. 10 people get the phone call, Steve, instead of the knock on the door from President David Baker. You get a phone call. Two-thirds of the people that are up, two-thirds of the modern candidates are getting a phone call. We don't know which ones.
Oh, yeah.
But it's two-thirds of them, and that makes it tough.
Later in the podcast, I'll get your prediction on who you think's going to get in there and how that'll go. But you know what? Before we hit some – well, you know what? Let me hit some Bucks stuff, Ira. There were just really a few different things that popped up here in this crazy and wild Super Bowl week. Now, your column about DeSean Jackson, you put it on paper saying, get rid of this guy. You know, enough of this.
Yeah, let's not fool around anymore, Steve.
And, you know, fans are kind of tired of this in the sense that it's nonsense. But I think the last straw for a lot of people, and maybe not, I don't want to speak for everybody, but I think the last straw, DeSean Jackson this week, we were the first to write it up on JoeBucksFan.com. He comes out and says he'd like to play for the Rams.
He's on a selling tour now, you know.
And now he said, you know, I got one more year in Tampa, but, you know, me and Sean McVay, blah, blah, blah. You don't do that in the NFL anywhere. It doesn't matter. You don't come out and say, I'd like to play for another team. That means you don't really want to play with your team. So,
and if Bruce Arians considers Antonio Brown a diva, which he does, and that set off a little bit of a firestorm in Pittsburgh, you know, why is Arians talking about another team's player? You know, wait till he gets a load of DeSean Jackson. You know, at one point, Steve, in a podcast, I thought he handled himself well in 2017 when he was a little bit frustrated that first year in Tampa. Then you read about some of the things that went on behind the scenes in 2017, and I almost feel like apologizing. He didn't handle himself well. I thought my point was in public. He never took a pot shot. Never took a pot shot at Winston in public, but a lot of stuff apparently was going on behind the scenes.
Yeah, I mean, I think some of it gets overblown. There's a lot of ways to look at it. He probably did his share of bad, his share of good.
Obviously, he was frustrated.
Clearly, Cutter was in charge of managing DeSean Jackson,
yes,
and botched it. You can blame Jackson all day long, but ultimately that falls on the head coach. You botched the relationship somehow. But, I mean, I hang a lot on Jackson. But one thing I keep coming back to, which, you know, it's in my craw, as we like to say in the podcast. It was on your Tampa 2 show with Derek Brooks on the Identity Tampa Bay. And I wrote it up on the website. It was maybe, I don't know, 8 weeks ago. Derek Brooks himself said he's heard about things DeSean Jackson is doing behind the scenes that are very encouraging. And he likes what DeSean's doing behind the scenes. He said, I have to leave it at that. That really shocked me that Brooks would say that. He wouldn't say it without merit.
Maybe he thought at that point the relationship could be repaired, Steve, and he was hoping.
I just wonder what Jackson was doing.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe. Who was he?
Maybe he was trying to reach out to Jameis at that point and repair the damage. But, you know, Steve, it doesn't make any sense because here's one of the points I make in the column. Steve, tell me what you think. If Jackson comes back, it's going to alter the way that Jameis Winston approaches his job when the season starts. He's going to try to placate DeSean Jackson because he doesn't want the same locker room friction to happen again in 2019. And, Steve, that's not what you want. You want Winston going in with an open mind. Hey, I'm going to spread the ball out. Here's a little for you, Howard. That's what Cutter preached, and rightfully so, you know. You can't have a guy thinking, I got to get the ball to Mike Evans 8 times and I got to get the ball this to Sean. That's not winning football, Steve. And you can't have that. Can't have that.
No, and it felt like that was the case. I mean, we'll never really know. Maybe we will eventually. Depends who's drinking.
And if it's all about Jameis Winston, Steve, which we both think it is to a large extent, then you want to give him as clean a bill as you can. Clear mind. Going into 2019.
It was interesting listening to Carson Palmer this week, Ira. Forget about that he predicted the Bucs to go 9-7 and a fast turnaround. He was talking about how Winston has the skills to connect on the deep ball, to be successful 30, 40 yards down the field. he made it very clear you don't throw slant passes in Bruce Arians' offense. It's just not about that, which made me start thinking about, you know, granted, Adam Humphries is not hitting a lot of catching a lot of slant passes, and I understand how offense works, but, you know, they want Humphries, but hey, man, I don't know how they're going to value these guys necessarily. Really, I think one of the keys here, nobody talks about it, nobody, but one of the keys to this offseason is how will Bruce Arians really evaluate Chris Godwin? Suppose he really believes that Godwin is what Jason Light and Dirk Cutter always said, another number one or third number one wide receiver. If you really believe that, if that's not a pile of BS, then things could change a lot here with how this offense runs and where Arians' priorities are in the draft and everything else. I don't know. He might not even be.
But if Jackson's not here, Steve, and you don't re-sign Humphries, then you've only got two sure commodities at the receiver position. You probably want another one for depth. I know you got Howard, and I think Brait's coming back, much to the consternation of some Buck fans who can't wait to get rid of Cameron Brait. I don't see the point. Well, I think Arians is going to look and say, I got two very good tight ends. He's going to like that.
Well, I mean, there's just a lot of decisions here to be made, and it's easy to assume how they're going to be made and from what angles, but this player evaluation thing cuts both ways. And you were with Arians this week, primarily to talk about the Hall of Fame, but, you know, you got a sense of what the man is doing. What's going on this week, it's always ignored about, well, who's the guy Arians likes? Who are the three guys he likes on film that most fans aren't really that high on? You know, maybe he really thinks O.J. Howard is the next Tony Gonzalez, and that might change the way you approach a lot of different things. So I don't know.
I could share this, Steve, and it's something that you've brought up on the podcast now for a week or two since Arians was officially named. Bruce Arians is going to bed every night thinking about not Charlize Theron. He's thinking about the offensive line. That's what he's thinking about in terms of, you know, remodeling this overhauling this franchise, building this culture, getting help from Winston. He's thinking about the O-line. Steve, it's the only part of the team that he's publicly said needs an upgrade. Am I correct? He hasn't said anything about the secondary.
He hinted at it with defensive line, but he's been consistent on the O-line.
So based on some of the things he said to me on Tuesday, and I even encouraged him. I said, Bruce, stay on this thing with the offensive line. You need a boost, I told him. And he laughed. He tapped me on the shoulder and he goes, you're right. That's what jumps out at him. Maybe he talked to a few people around the league. Maybe he talked to some people that was on the Buck staff last year. That's a big, big focus. And you know he's talking to Jason Light every freaking day. Get busy in free agency. Tell your boys and the scouts, get me a couple of big, tough-ass offensive linemen. That's what I want. I'm not saying the first three draft picks are going to be tackle, guard, tackle, but it's going to be addressed. And they're going to have some new starters, and I think maybe more than one.
Yeah, I think one overlooked element here that, you know, has come out already, it just hasn't been talked about much. Remember, Harold Goodwin said that he spent time with the Bucks in the spring last year. He visited in meeting rooms because he was a good friend. Is George Warhop, who was one of his early mentors. And, you know, I don't know what he saw. I don't know what Warhop has told him already. You know,
but he's got a feel for the room.
Yeah, he's got a strong feel, which, of course, Arians has the ultimate trust in this entire staff, which is why, you know, he's done what he's done, which is pick his buddies who he can trust and hit the ground running. I can already hear fans saying, you can't trust George Warhop. Well, Warhop can say, watch this game.
He's watching the film.
Right, but yeah. He could tell Goodwin, hey, make your own evaluations, but watch this game or this series of games on Beninac, and watch this from DeMar and make your own evaluations. And
it seems, Steve, without knowing it for a fact, but our instincts tell us, Arians has already talked to Goodwin about this O-line. You know, Arians didn't come up with this stuff out of the air. I don't believe he did a Buck regular season game last year. Am I right?
He did a preseason game.
Okay, he did
but,
a preseason game.
You know,
game.
That film work, when you're watching common opponents like these guys do, they'll watch cut-ups. You know, if you're watching the Ravens defense and it's against the Bucks,
and the Bucks can't run the ball, you know,
bad example because it was late in the season, but if
the Browns game or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. So he's seeing the Browns game and he's watching Donovan Smith, you know, get gassed and all this other stuff. I don't know. But we will be diving into all this stuff. I love to get really deep into it as soon as that free agency, not when the bell rings, but when the new season starts after the Super Bowl. You know, it's all out.
Steve, it fits the pattern of help Jameis be his best self. It fits. Get some run blockers in there. Get the play action to be effective. Stop with the third and sevens. Make it third and two. Makes all the difference in the world. Take pressure off number three. It all fits, Steve. It all fits.
It does, and you will be talking a lot about running backs going forward. The Bucs actually had a bit of a leak, if you will. Buccaneers.com, they did a little story with Jason Light's director of college scouting, who sort of tipped off that they are really leaning into the running backs heavily, which, you know what, if you really believed Peyton Barber was a number one and you really believed in Ronald Jones, you probably wouldn't be doing that. So, but those little nuggets, some people laugh at that, but you know what? Dirk Cutter sat at the owners' meetings last year and told everybody in an offhanded comment that they'd be drafting multiple cornerbacks at that, and that came true.
Cornerbacks, not quarterbacks.
Yeah, cornerbacks. All right, Ira, look, Super Bowl Sunday, everybody watches the game. Everybody hates the Patriots. No, I'm kidding. What's your pick? You're the sage.
All right, here's what's interesting, Steve. Conference title games. Both teams on the road going into tough venues, especially the Rams going into New Orleans. I'm not going to say everybody talks how tough Arrowhead is. Well, history said it's not that tough in the playoffs. Both teams, Steve, I think you'd agree, came out and dominated the opening half on the road against, I believe, both home teams were favored. I know the Chiefs were favored. I believe the Saints were favored. Dominant first halves. Took charge of the game. Took the crowd out of it. Rams strong. Saints didn't do much in the beginning. The Chiefs didn't show up in the first half. A lot of that was the Patriots. So that tells me that both these teams are really good. Now, the Rams won two more games than the Pats did during the regular season. They played well against Dallas, even with the non-call. You'd be hard-pressed to say the Saints outplayed the Rams, or the Saints should have won the game even without the call. You've heard me on the Chiefs. I'm a longtime Chiefs fan. Chiefs were outplayed. Chiefs were outplayed by the Patriots. 36 first downs? It's absurd. Absolutely absurd by the Patriots. Ran whenever they wanted. Ran on third and five like three times in the first half and made it all three times. The Patriots are a team that the sum of the parts are better than the individual parts. I'll say it again. This is not one of the more talented Bill Belichick rosters. It's just not. If James White was on another team, you know, if he was on Washington Redskins, no, nobody'd be talking about James White. Yeah, he's a good little receiver out of the backfield. Put him on New England, all of a sudden he's helping them get to the Super Bowl. So this is a long-winded way of saying nobody's rooting for the Patriots outside of New England. You're right. I'm going to pick the Rams. Derek Brooks also picked the Rams, and you know how Brooks hates to agree with me on anything, especially what color is the sky. Brooks doesn't want to agree with me. So we're both going with the Rams. I was very impressed with the way they started that game against New Orleans. And I'll say one more thing, Steve. Every time the Patriots are in a Super Bowl, they don't blow anybody out. They're all close. Even when they win, they beat Philly. It was a tough game. They beat Carolina. It was a tough game. We know what they did against Atlanta. The Seattle game was tight. They don't blow people out in a Super Bowl, and they ain't going to blow out the Rams. Some people are thinking Aqib Talib could be the key figure in this game, Steve. He could be the key figure. We'll see. He will have an answer for Aaron Donald. Steve, he will. The offensive line in New England was spectacular against the Chiefs. Spectacular. They don't have Aaron Donald, but they got a guy named Chris Jones. Pretty damn good, Steve. Chris Jones, very good defensive tackle. Nobody's Aaron Donald. Belichick will have an answer for Donald. I'm still going to pick the Rams by a touchdown.
Gotcha, Sage. Fun little nugget from Warren Sapp, one of his many interviews. He was talking about the Falcons' loss to the Patriots a couple years ago. And we all know what happened in that game, the meltdown, and it was right there for the Falcons to just kill a little clock and win. Well, Sapp said he called Raheem Morris, Atlanta assistant head coach, after that game, and he said Raheem said he needed a couple of weeks to just come down from the disappointment. and he'd get back to him. Well, Sapp says Raheem finally gets back to him and tells him, look, and Sapp's like screaming at him, why didn't you just run the ball?
After that Julio Jones catch.
And Morris says to him, Raheem says to him, hey, man, this is according to Sapp. Hey, you know, Matt Ryan wanted to run his favorite plays. He wanted to go to his pet plays, his favorites, and, you know, that wasn't it.
He took a sack.
We didn't take the ball out of his hands. You know, we went with what Matt wanted, you know. And then Sapp talked about how offensive coordinators have to work with quarterbacks and head coaches. And Sapp talked about sitting in the offensive meetings with the Bucs because he liked to do that. And he saw how Gruden did it. And, you know, he just thought weak coaching cost Atlanta. But him talking to Raheem, Sapp, of course, claims that he raised Raheem. And Raheem's success is all due to him. So Sapp's a piece of work.
You know, Steve, that issue comes up a lot. Like, even people are talking about Sean Payton. Obviously, the main storyline was the blown call, and everybody knows it was horrible and indefensible. But the Saints got, towards the goal line, and everybody thought they were going to run the ball, and Sean Payton started throwing the ball. And sometimes you don't make the right call. Sometimes you just get out of whack.
Oh, yeah, it was terrible by Sean Payton. He really mismanaged that. I mean, they should have won. Well, we all saw the game, but, yeah, some of those decisions were crazy in that game. Now, Ira, I'm going to say I picked the Rams as well, so I'm right there with you. But I think it's mostly because the Rams, what's overlooked is really how well their defense played against the Saints to hold them to that number of points and the way that game went. Now, we saw what happened at the end, but the defense played extremely well, and they just have the muscle on defense, I think, to get to Brady.
You got to cover White out of the backfield, Steve. It's a big key. You got to cover that guy.
Yeah, they have the bodies on defense, and if Sue, this is a signature game here for Sue, who really is a very super intelligent, well-spoken guy.
I think McCoy's had a better career than Sue. I would argue that. I think it's arguable.
Well, maybe we'll have that debate in the offseason, Ira, but I think...
But it is a big game for Sue.
I don't think I agree with you, but this is a career defining game for Sue. He wins that Super Bowl, you know he's going to be walking into that Hall of Fame with the career that he's had and where he's
going. Well, he's
going
to have to wait for Aaron Donald, because Aaron Donald's getting in first, and you don't have a problem with that, Steven.
Well, it depends when they retire. It's all about those numbers games, but I think Sue's going to, who has played extremely well going forward here, that tandem, if the Patriots still do that max protect stuff that they did, what they ran the ball, 48 times? Last game, I just don't think that's going to work this time around.
If the Pats win, Steve, do you see either Brady or Belichick walking off into the sunset?
No. Yeah. I don't think there's any evidence why that would happen.
Didn't Brady just say the other day he wants to keep playing? I think he did.
He said that so many times, and he's at the top of his game. I mean, he clearly enjoys it. Why would he walk away? I could see Gronkowski walking away.
That I could see.
All right, Ira. The Hall of Fame, right? This is your thing. We talked about it, but let me just run down the list in a hurry here. Tony Gonzalez, Isaac Bruce, wide receiver. Of course, the Rams, great. Edgerrin James, overlooked running back. Ed Reed, slam dunk. Steve Atwater, competition there for Lynch, played 11 years. Champ Bailey, you know he's a Hall of Famer one day. Ty Law, who is another cornerback who's been hanging around for a while. John Lynch, of course. Tony Boselli, a wild card, as a great player who didn't play too long. Steve Hutchinson, a guard who played a heck of a long time. But
Seattle and Minnesota, yep.
You've got this logjam of more offensive linemen. Alan Faneca is up, Steelers and Jets. Kevin Mawai, of course, he played a long time as a superior center. I've heard a lot of people say he's maybe the greatest center to ever play the game. Richard Seymour is out there. Don Coryell is a coach. Tom Flores is a coach. Who gets in, Ira? Five guys are getting in.
Well, I'm not going to say I'm unbiased on this topic. I'm going to say the sure things are certainly Ed Reed and Tony Gonzalez. And nobody that's ever watched football should argue those things. They are transcendent players. They are. I'm not convinced Champ Bailey's going in his first year of eligibility. I wouldn't be shocked that he does. As you pointed out to me about 20 minutes ago, Kaufman, the guy's got 12 Pro Bowls, Kaufman. 12. I understand that. He ain't Deion Sanders, but he was damn good. Everybody on this list was damn good. Now, I think Bailey's a key guy, and I'll tell you why. If you assume, which you should, that Gonzalez and Reed are getting in. If Bailey also gets in as a first-time eligible, you have 12 guys scrambling over each other's bodies for only two spots. That doesn't bode great for John Lynch, nor does it bode great for those offensive linemen. It's a heck of a squeeze. It's a heck of a squeeze. If Bailey doesn't get in his first year of eligibility, now you got three spots open. It's quite a bit better. All right, so let me make my picks. Reed, and I'm not going to be in the room, but this is preliminary before I've heard the speeches.
Sure, of course it's preliminary.
I would think it's going to be Reed, Gonzalez, Edgerrin James. I think this is the year for Edgerrin James. One offensive lineman, and I think it's going to be Boselli and John Lynch, who has been waiting the longest, who has been in that room six straight years, who changed schemes in 04 and reinvented himself. That has to count. So John Lynch is my fifth guy. There is your class of 2019.
Sage, do you think it hurts John Lynch that the senior finalist this year is a safety, Johnny Robinson? There have been a lot of chatter. It's been a lot of chatter for years now. Safety gets ignored, but Kenny Easley got in recently. And we saw, obviously, Ed Reed's getting in this year.
And Dawkins
and
left.
Brian Dawkins. So you can that argument sort of falls apart. And if the senior finalist is there, do you think voters might say, well, you know what? I am putting in a safety this year. I'm throwing in this guy, Johnny Robinson, that I never saw.
No, I don't think Robinson's a factor, Steve, because having been in that room since 05, people look at the modern era candidates, the 15 guys. Those are the guys that are judged against each other. The two seniors and the contributor, or the two contributors and the senior, they are separate. They are separate, and they don't factor in. Nobody's thinking about, hey, Robinson happens to be a safety. I don't see it, Steve. Now, the question is, would you put two safeties in, because we know Reed's getting in? Well, Ray Lewis got in as a first-timer, and all of a sudden, Brian Urlacher walked in last year. Two middle linebackers, great players. So I don't think one necessarily rubs out the other, and I don't think Johnny Robinson will be a factor. I do not.
All right, Sage, a lot of fun times for Bucks fans. We've made it through another football season.
You realize the next time we're on a podcast, Steve, next week, and we'll have the Kemper back, we're going to know the class of 2019. It's a tense time, but it's a fun time.
I'll let you give a final word. Again, you sat in front of Bruce Arians. I know there's not a lot you can say, but you were in his office, I'm assuming?
In his office.
What's the vibe in there?
Well, he had his golf clubs next to the couch. That's number one. And he talked about his great tournament, which is going to be right before the owners' meetings in Arizona, where you will, I was going to say you and I, but right now it's you, Izvitz, until things change. You will be in Arizona. You may even try to sneak into that golf tournament. Anyway, Steve, my one word I want to leave with Buck fans on this podcast is I was in Arian's office for about 20 minutes. What comes through? His passion. He wants this bad. He wants another notch on his belt. We know what he did in Arizona. He thinks he can do it again in Tampa. And he thinks it will be easier to do it in Tampa. And he's not wasting any time doing it. They went from 5 to 10. He sees the same kind of quick catapult in Tampa. He's up to the task. He can't wait to start.
All right, get out of here, Sage. Thank you, Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa. Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon, we'll see you next week.